Would you call yourself a socialist?
No.
You've never told a lie in politics?
No.
See, somebody sent me a video actually last Friday, and it had you talking at the socialist union.
Yes.
And you mentioned the word comrade about four times in a minute. What was that about?
It was a rally, and I would have been about 25 years old.
Comrade.
That was in 2009.
Oh, well, I can't remember which country it was in.
Has it changed since those days?
No, not particularly.
Morning, Grant Edwards here from Liberty NZ, and today I'm having a conversation with Kevin McCracken from Star of the Beast. Morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Grant.
Now, we had a chat yesterday and also this morning before we went on air about mortgages, and you said that it's a pretty in-depth thing, but you brought to light some very interesting things about enduring power of attorney and mortgage memorandums and all those things that we never look at, we just sign. And so I'd really love to hear what you've got to say as to whether the banks actually do have authority to take a house to a mortgagee sale if you got behind, or what authority do they have that? And it's all about authority, isn't it?
Yes, it's very much so, yes. So yeah, they think that they have authority over us.
And so you just tell us about what we thought they had. I mean, an enduring power of attorney, which is what I thought all mortgagees had over your property.
Right.
When you had a mortgage with them.
The power of attorney is an irrevocable power of attorney. So when you go back to the bank and said, I want to remove the power of attorney, they say you cannot because it's irrevocable. It cannot be done. So the biggest problem we had was we had to go searching for the booklet or wherever the information was that housed the power of attorney clause. The problem was that when it came to signing all the loan documents with the lawyer or the mortgage documents, there was actually no mention of a power of attorney. That was not disclosed to us, and everyone I've talked to, it has never been disclosed, even though they say that the major terms have been disclosed to you within a mortgage, or the lawyer is supposed to disclose them. The one thing that no one has heard about is there is a power of attorney clause on your mortgage.
So when you went to the bank, they had nothing in writing to show you that they had an enduring power of attorney over you or your mortgage.
That is correct. Yes, even the lawyer. The problem is that the booklet or the document called the memorandum of mortgage, and certainly in my case, it was not disclosed to me at time of signing the documents, and very, very few people have ever come across that memorandum of mortgage until we've highlighted the fact that there's a power of attorney. And that's a document that never gets signed or initialed, but it is actually a document that they disclose to LINZ. When you do the electronic transfer to LINZ, that memorandum with a particular number is put on that electronic transfer. It is sent to LINZ, and LINZ, they take it as that is your security agreement, is that particular document. And that is the power. So when you look at your, go to LINZ and get a copy of your title, and at the bottom it says interest. And under interest, it state the bank with a mortgage, and it'll have a particular number. Well, that is actually the new memorandum of mortgage number, which is actually a security number. And that is what gets on-sold by your bank to whoever wishes to buy it, whether it's on the bond market, wherever the banks are selling to generate capital, that number is actually the one that is being sold.
Wow.
So, yeah.
This has opened up a can of worms, isn't it?
Very much so. Yeah. That's just a small aspect of mortgages that we had no ideas about.
So we're
trying to find whereabouts or who actually buys up these mortgages. Because once a mortgage is sold, It actually states within your, depending on the bank, but it'll state within your agreement that whoever buys the mortgage, they become the new security interest, and your bank passes on its rights to the new security agreement. So realistically, whoever purchases your mortgage, being the new security agreement, if you stop paying your mortgage, technically, your bank has no right to actually come after you, because they are no longer in possession of your title or of your security. Your security agreement.
Because quite often they'll sell the property, and if there's anything still outgoing, they'll take you and bankrupt you.
Very much so, yes.
So they don't have authority to do that, do you think? Well, you're questioning it.
That is what we are questioning. They do not have the authority, because once they, it'll state within your loan documents that once they have unsold your mortgage, the new purchaser, they become the secured party, and also all the rights get passed over to the new security, you know, whoever's purchased.
Very interesting.
When that happens, it would release your bank.
So how is it that they can go to the courts and put through a bankruptcy notice? How could they do that if they don't have that authority?
If they don't have the, because the bank, the courts are actually, and the lawyers are part of the scheme.
It sounds like a scam.
It is a scam, and it is fraud. It is, yes, very much so. So the only reason that someone can go to court is when they can put forward a case that they are losing something. And in this case, the bank is putting forth that they are actually losing money, or they have a debt that is not being paid to them. But obviously, they're not producing the actual documents to prove that they still own that debt.
So if it's secured by a property mortgage, if your loan is secured by the house or the title, and then they on-sell that mortgage or title, whatever they do, then they shouldn't really have, even if they lose money, they shouldn't really have any comeback on you.
That's it. Well, not particularly the bank itself. They shouldn't have any form of comeback on you. If you stop paying your mortgage, it should be then the new secured party who would come back and say, we actually need to take you, rather than the bank. It should be the secured party, because they are the new secured interest in the title.
Hang on. So if the bank sells it to a third party, are you saying that they would have a comeback on the original?
They would, because it says in the guarantee that the new third party is the new secured interest.
Oh.
So they are the, yeah.
I get confused. Mortgagee is the person who's got the mortgage, and a mortgagor is the person that issues the mortgage, right?
Correct, yes.
I think I said it around the wrong way before.
Right. But yeah, and so the one actually holding the mortgage should be the one that says, hey, you know, you need to start paying, or we've got a problem.
Yeah.
But if the bank sells it, they've released their obligation to hold that security agreement, and the new purchaser, they should be now the one that actually takes up that challenge to pursue, whether through the courts or whoever.
Right. So that's mortgages. So in a nutshell, there doesn't appear to be a signed enduring power of attorney that the banks are supposed to have, which gives them authority to take your house to a mortgagee sale.
Correct.
So it seems, but I was sure that it was in there, but then I've been studying some American documents where they talked about the bank having enduring power of attorney. And
one of the problems you've got also is the fact that people don't realize that a mortgage is a credit contract, the same as a credit card. It's not actually a loan agreement. It's actually a credit contract. And the interesting thing with that is they are actually offering us credit. But when you look at your guarantee, they're expecting payment to be in secured money. Well, secured money, when you look at the Reserve Banking Act of 2021, if you look at notes, that is legal tender, but only coins are money.
Coins so, not paper money?
Not paper money, no. No, money is not paper. Paper is only basically a promissory note. Paper is only legal tender, whereas coins are legal tender.
I thought checks were a promissory note. So,
yeah, it's because when you look at your note, there is no dollar value basically on it. It's only a piece of paper with numbers now. That is so it's basically
an
exchange. Sorry?
I don't have any money to look at.
So basically, you can almost look at it as a piece of paper for bartering.
It used to say legal tender.
Yes, they just call it legal tender. But whereas coins are actually money, because coins can be gold, silver, nickel, it still has a value.
Right.
And that is showing that a coin has more value than a note. A note actually has no value.
Okay. So knowing that it looks as though that the banks don't have enduring power of attorney, so therefore their right to take your house to a mortgagee sale seems to be a grey area. So what can, if you were in that situation, let's say someone was in that situation where the bank's putting pressure on you, they're threatening to sell your house up, what do you do?
The first course of action that we've actually taken, we have dealt with someone that they couldn't pay for their mortgage, and then after 18 months, the bank gave them the foreclosure notice.
Yeah,
and that's when we stepped in to help out. That's right. When we found out about it. So first thing we did was we sent the bank a letter stating anybody associated with the bank is trespassed, to make sure that everyone, you know, whether it's a land agent, whoever, is actually trespassed from the property.
Right.
The second was we did a conditional acceptance letter. And what it is we're asking two questions. One is the fact of valuable consideration must be given for a contract to be formed in the first place.
Yes.
And we're asking where there is valuable consideration. Because for valuable consideration, someone must lose something and someone must gain something. So we're saying that we want to see your books, basically, just to prove to us that there has been a negative balance on your books where you actually have lost that revenue, and show us, because when you sign documents, anything like that, we're not given any form of financial statement. So we haven't, because it's a credit contract, we haven't even really, we actually have only gained credit, and we don't see any sign of transaction. So we're saying, please show us, you know, a sign of transaction. We need to see the loss in your account, and we need to see the gain in either our account or within the purchase, either the seller's account or someone's account. That needs to be, and we know that they cannot prove that. Because of fractional banking,
yes,
they cannot produce that evidence.
So what do you do? How are you able to help these people?
This is the process. So, the second question is regarding the security agreement. We want proof that you haven't sold it, because if you haven't sold it and you can produce the original copy to us, then you have a claim against us. If you have sold it, you no longer have a claim against us.
And so this is going are back- you better to let the bank sell your property, or are you better to sell it and pay them all that you've got, and then if there's anything left over, you know?
Well, so what we've done is, going through this process, what the bank has actually done is they sent the foreclosure with a time frame, and then after 6 weeks of receiving these first two, the people actually got another letter from the bank trying to recontract and lowering the payments and so forth to actually get them to recontract.
That is incredible.
So this, yeah, so this is, I mean, this, what we're doing is something that basically, from our knowledge, has never been
done. Never been done in this country.
No. So, I mean, we are still progressing. So basically, we haven't finished with these letters. The first one is your conditional acceptance. The next one after that is notice of default.
These are letters that you write to the bank on their behalf.
Yes. They're template letters. Yeah. So we've set them up as template letters that anybody, if they contact us at, so the email address is starvethebeast2021@outlook.com.
I'll put that in the description of this podcast. Yep,
or you can go onto the website, onto Facebook page, Starve the Beast 2021.
Yeah, what was it?
Starve the Beast. You can also go onto another page we've got called Starve the Beast 2022, where all the documents, without having to interact with anybody, you can actually just download all these documents.
That's good. So that's where all your support documents are and templates and things like that.
Yes. Yep. So,
These
letters that we're doing at the moment to the banks.
Yeah.
Very shortly, we've templated the first two. I'm about to template the third one. Third one, which is notice of default if they don't answer you. And then if they don't answer that, then you give them an opportunity to cure. So that is basically reiterating the two questions that we originally asked, because within their contract system, within maritime law, everything is done in threes. You must do things in threes.
Okay, I've heard that before.
Yes, that's why we use this process.
It was probably you told me that yesterday. Everything in threes. So the sort of people that would require some help would be people that had been that had lost their jobs through the vaccination program, the so-called gene therapy, and either left because they didn't want to get the jab, or they were told to leave because they didn't want to get it. What they call it, mandated out of a job, but the whole word mandate's not even a mandate, isn't a law. I think you had told me that yesterday, that they try to make correct. It seem like it's law, but it's not law. It's just a suggestion.
Yep. It's not law until you consent to something. So then that mandate becomes law because you've consented to it.
Right. So therefore, the company then would be responsible, and that would be where someone like Liz Lambert comes in, an employment law.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Quite correct. Yep.
Okay. Well, that's really good. And so, are most of the people that you talk to, are they people that have been mandated out of a job, for want of a better term?
They've either been mandated. Even people are actually, once they've learnt that they have been deceived with their mortgage, that is also where it's a case of, if you're paying into a fraud, you're part of the fraud. And the worst thing about it is the fact that you're the only one that has signed these documents, the bank hasn't. So if this ever goes any further, the bank has no liability. All the liability falls on your shoulders.
Oh, I see what you
mean.
Because
you're the only one that signed.
Oh.
So if you prove, or if this is proven that, you know, I mean, mortgages are fraud, where does the liability fall?
So how do we get money to buy a house in the future?
And this is going to be the real problem. At the moment, inflation is basically working against us.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that we can keep on borrowing money, that creates inflation, because that then pushes the price of houses up.
Mm.
So the more people that can actually borrow money and buy houses, it's supply and demand. You know, the more demand there is for a house, they're going to push up the price of inflation. As soon as the interest rates start climbing and the banks say, well, we can no longer lend, or people can't buy houses, well, the house prices are going to drop, and they will shortly significantly drop. And even to the point where then people can possibly start looking at entering into the housing market, or If everybody, let's say, for instance, that we actually said, right, mortgages, and we proved that mortgages are fraud, which means that once we prove that, all contracts or all mortgage loan contracts are actually fraud, it means then they're null and void. So if somebody, let's say, buys a house for let's say, $500,000, and in 2 years' time, they say, well, my contracts no longer exist, so, but I've only paid probably $20,000, $30,000 towards it. So realistically, that actually only owes me $30,000, let's say. So if you actually sell it for $50,000, well, for a start, you're going to be doing well. So in some respects, we can actually recreate inflation in itself. Or we can go back to the old days where housing, land was passed from generation to generation. I think what we need to actually create a new system. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Kevin McCracken, and Kevin has the Facebook page Starve the Beast 2020. And what's the other one, Starve the Beast?
So Starve the Beast 2021 and Starve the Beast 2022.
Right. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, on Facebook.
Interest rates are prophesied, projected to peak at 9.6 next year percent.
But realistically, interest rates need to be above inflation. And the inflation rates they're giving you at the moment, if you go back to the 1980s, how they actually measured true inflation, we would be more up around the 18 to possibly 22% is our true inflation rate.
I had a mortgage of 18.5% when I in the 80s.
In the 80s, yeah. Correct. And that was because they had, for inflation to come down, you've got to get interest rates above inflation rate.
Yeah.
So for that to happen, you need to actually create the true inflation rate and not the one that's projected at the moment, because the higher the inflation, the better the government likes it, because it reduces their debt.
But it was manageable because, you know, your house is only worth $250,000 or, you know, or less, and or even probably only 150. And so, you know, you could afford 18%, you know, on the wage that you're on. But I don't think I don't know if I could afford 18% on if I had a $700,000 mortgage.
No, but what will happen is as these interest rates do increase, and that's where people are going to get into trouble, you know, far as the and what we're doing with these mortgages, I can foresee that people are going to struggle financially. There's probably going to be a lot of potential foreclosures. So this is what will actually even apply. For those that were mandated out of their jobs.
Have you been able to stave off a bank foreclosing on someone that you've been dealing with, that you've been talking to?
Like I was saying, I mean, there's people that they got the foreclosure letter and then now they want to recontract. That's the best that we've got so far, where we know that we can actually hold them at bay.
Right.
We're just discussing at the moment whether we actually become more aggressive and actually take this to court. And that is looking like the way we're going to go.
Oh, really?
So that we can create a precedent in regards to this. Because people that have tried the taking banks to court and so forth have gone down the reasoning of, to do with that they just make money out of thin air, basically, you know.
All right.
Usury. Whereas no one has come from the angle of the memorandum, the irrevocable power of attorney, anything like that.
Mm.
No one has come from these angles or avenues in regards to dealing with banks.
Why would they loan you money? Well, they don't really loan you money, do they? But why would they go ahead and issue you with a mortgage and they haven't got the documentation sorted out properly? Irresponsible.
Basically, what it is when you sign your loan agreement, it's always about 3 or 4 days after you'll get a phone call from the lawyer to say, yes, you can come and sign the documents.
Yeah.
The reason for that is when you've signed those loan agreements, that's basically that's your promise to pay. That becomes your security agreement or the beginning of it.
Yeah.
So they take that security agreement to the Reserve Bank and says, like, we want to, we want this amount of money, to loan to, these people.
Right.
So what the bank does is they go and increase that money tenfold, and then they'll give the initial money they got from Reserve Bank back to it within 3 days and say, no, we're cancelling this contract. And then they will actually loan you money that they've created out of fractional banking, loan it to you and charge interest on top of that.
Yeah.
And then once you've signed the loan documents at the lawyer, then they will also sell that security agreement on to make money also. So then they're making money from all different directions. It becomes quite involved. Ah. Now, the interesting thing about this is I looked into it from the point where what gives them the right, basically, then the moment they sold it and it becomes another, the other people become the secured interest.
Oh, this is after a mortgage sale.
No, so once you've signed the loan documents at the lawyers, and then probably the next day the bank sells your mortgage to make money on it, the moment they sell it, they actually have no right taking money from your account to pay that mortgage because they're no longer in possession of it.
And you're absolutely sure of that?
That's what we're actually going down this avenue now about. That's why we need to find out, to make sure that whereabouts is our actual loan documents. Where is that security? Who holds that security agreement? Because I know for a fact that my indemnity and guarantee document I signed states that when they sell it, they sell the rights.
Yeah.
So if you sell your rights, you no longer have any. So that means then that basically if they are actually still taking money from your account, and you're thinking that you're paying the bank because they have your mortgage or the debt to them, in actual fact, they're actually stealing from you.
This is very good, Kevin. We are fast running out of time. Kevin McCracken from Starve the Beast on Facebook. I would love you to come back. Would you come back and talk to me about allodial title and the problem with the word allodial, and explain to me how we could how we can put our, or perhaps a better way of doing it might be native title. I think you mentioned that yesterday, and I'd love you to come back and talk to us about that. Would that be all right with you?
No problems at all.
That'd be great. Well, thank you, Kevin. Thanks for coming along, and I look forward to hearing from you again on allodial title or native title, and what's the difference?
Yes, certainly.
Thanks very much.
Right. Thanks for having me.
People should not be walking around with masks. Let me just state for the record that masks are not theater. Wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better.
And masks are protective.
But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
There has not been any indication that putting a mask on and wearing a mask for a considerable period of time has any deleterious effects.
There are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course.
You do not need to wear a mask indoors if, in fact, you've been vaccinated. But good that you're vaccinated, but in a situation where you have people indoors, particularly crowded, you should wear a mask.
So even if you are vaccinated, you should wear a mask.
That if, in fact, you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, you are protected, and you do not need to wear a mask outdoors or indoors.
When the children go out into the community, you want them to continue to wear masks.
You know, if you look at children outside, particularly when they're with the family, walking down the street, playing a game or what have you, don't have to wear a mask.
The Academy of Pediatric actually makes that recommendation that children should be wearing masks from 2 years old onward.
And you're asking now, if your child is a member of your household, can you walk outdoors with your child without a mask? According to that chart, the answer is yes.
But the child can't, not to beat it to death. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Because now the CDC says, I mean, I think I've got this right. One mask is better than zero masks. Two masks is better than one mask. But you don't have to have double masks. Is that right? I mean,
you know, it became clear that cloth coverings that you didn't have to buy in a store, that you could make yourself, were adequate.
And then you want it to fit better. So one of the ways you could do it, if you would like to, is put a cloth mask over, which actually here and here and here, where you could get leakage in, is much better contained.
And are you a double masker, Dr. Fauci? Look like you are.
Yeah. Well, it was all very complicated for someone like me. You know, this is so new, isn't it?
It is. I was in Christchurch last night, you know, like I was saying to the assembly up there in Rolleston, and people are just literally shaking their heads. You know, they've never heard anything like this.
Yeah.
This has just opened up the fractional banking. I mean, I have a court case back in 1968, I think it is, where a lawyer actually took the bank to court and won the case.
Wow.
Through fractional banking. And other people have tried it, and it's sort of been hit and miss.
Right.
Nobody's ever gone down this avenue before.
Maybe that's lawyer that won went down.
I mean, fractional banking is the fact that they can't actually, that's that valuable consideration.
Yeah.
They can't produce valuable consideration.
Oh, that's very interesting. Hey, we're going to get cut off. So are you able to talk tomorrow?
Yeah, no, good as gold. Yep.
Okay. What's a good time?
Probably about the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'll be great, Kevin. Thanks so much.
Yep. No, that's good as gold.
I'll see you tomorrow.
No worries. Okay. Rightio.
Bye.